better one. This is the one now.
Rebbe, everything's okay.
What are you referring to? Oh, I had the operation too. Yeah, it's just.
Oh, I thought they did it a while ago.
No, no, that was a different cyst. It's a sebaceous cyst. It's
okay.
When they grow, they generally grow 2-3.
Okay.
And they don't like to do the operation altogether because they're using a.
You're on.
Good. Okay. Beautiful. All right. I hope for the best. It's unbelievable with the kolel. We're dealing with a different generation, and they're overwhelmed by Gemara and Yeridaya, etc. Okay, as someone just told me over the phone, who knows some of this, they can't read Hebrew properly. Ein ma lasot, we have to deal with reality. Okay, today is August 26th, 2018, and again, I want to say hello to the students in front of me and to the many listening across the wide expanse of the Jewish world. The question of Kaddish evoked a lot of comment from all over the world, and we're going to go further today. It's a very fascinating shiur with material, both classic Torah and a little bit insight when you view it from the point of view of Chochmat Yisrael, scientific Jewish scholarship. But people put a tremendous stress on Kaddish, and we all understand that. Those of us that have been in the rabbinate, time and again, Jews came back to Yiddishkeit only because they had to say Kaddish, and the rabbi grabbed them. And that story repeats itself. I just saw in a recent issue of Bamishpacha, it's the person writing, it's the column is a rabbi's perspective, Rabbi Ron Yitzchak Eisenman, he's a graduate of this kolel. So Rabbi Eisenman writes, this morning I awoke for the first time in the last 11 months. I did not awake with the fear, or more accurately, the feeling of anxiety and disquiet had occupied my mind every morning for the last 330 days. And he's talking about Kaddish. As I awoke this morning and realized I completed my mission and fulfilled my obligation, my natural and visceral reaction was to call my mother and share with her the news. Quote, Mom, I did it. I finished saying Kaddish for you. End quote. And you see here, this is a rabbi. And if you know Rabbi Eisenman, when you see him, a long beard, rabbinic clothes, and he too was overjoyed. He kept the Kaddish. It has a tremendous impact. Halachically, what's Kaddish? Where does it begin? How do we have sources? All of Shas, etc. Well, we find, like I said last week, in the Masechet Sofrim, which is not exactly as authoritative as the Gemara, at some point between Siyum Chazal, Ravina Ravashi, and the start of the Goni period. So there we find for the first time that it mentions Kaddish along with Baruch Hu, and you have to have a minion to say either one. Now, Nachum Lam, not the president, past president of Yeshiva University, but my Talmud, Nachum Lam, who lives in Israel, wrote to me, and he says it a little bit clearer than I said last week, that Rabbi David the Soul of Pool attributes the Kaddish to the fact that with the Crusades and all that happened during that period, going back onto 1,000 years ago, a little less, everyone wanted to say Kaddish. Everyone lost people. And that's when they came up with this idea of dividing the Kaddishim up, and each one gets a right to say one Kaddish, and each one can discharge his obligation. The Crusades, all that went with it, afterwards the Khmelnytsky massacres, what went on in Spain and Portugal, and all this created the need for people to say Kaddish. There is no question that the original minhag was to say one Kaddish, one person, not a mob scene saying Kaddish. And this still continues in the German shuls. It's interesting, I've davened many times at Sfatik Minyanim, Eidat HaMizrach, and there everyone says Kaddish together, just like the most Ashkenazic shuls. But in the German shuls, you see it. I mentioned Monk Shul in London. Yitzchak, you don't have to go so far to go to Monk Shul. Mel Hammelberger, a virtual student, wrote to me, "It's a pleasure to have the shirim back on schedule. Much haslacha. If you want to see a shul where one person says Kaddish in Ramat, there is a Yekesh shul, Kahal Adat Yeshurim. And there, one person says just like in Monk Shul." Now, I also it's interesting how the memory works. I want to thank my dear student Rabbi Yoshua Grunstein. Come close. Don't sit so far. Your grandfather, come. Don't be frightened.
Don't the air on?
Excuse me.
Don't the air on the air conditioning?
You want the air conditioning? Turn it on.
Yeah.
I don't like it too cold, but I think I have it at 22, 23, 22. Fine.
It gets colder now.
Okay. Let it waken you up. Okay, so it's interesting. I mentioned that Rabbi Steve Riskin, and you got to remember Rabbi Steve Riskin, long career. He's a drop younger than I am, not by much. He may be 2 years younger than I am. So when you get older, believe me, a 2-year difference is meaningless. And we were classmates, and I can tell you, it's not for now, I can tell you the whole story with the Rav and what went on and Lincoln Square. But Binyamin, am I right? Fine, Messer? Binyamin, first name? My memory is good. Okay, good. So I remembered that Rabbi Riskin, the Avichai Foundation, Zalman Bernstein, this is what put Rabbi Riskin on the map. And I remembered that with the Kaddish, with the money involved, but I didn't have the story entirely right. I was right. It links together, but I want to say, Rabbi Grinstein sent me a printout. It's amazing what's available on the computer. This was published, a memorial to Zalman Bernstein when he died. It's almost 20 years ago. We're going back, his years, 1926, 1999. He later went with the name Zalman Chaim Bernstein. Originally it was Sanford Bernstein. The New York Times did tremendous articles on him in the magazine section, not just the business section. And the story of how he meets Riskin is very interesting. That they meet, like I said, he came in, he had to say Kaddish, and he tells Riskin, Riskin wants to pursue the contact. He sees this is someone that may be of help to him. And he makes an appointment. He decided to meet the next day in his office at 1 p.m. As he handed me his card, he said, "Ask for the president of the company, Sanford Bernstein. That's me." And Riskin arrives. He arrives at the office at 1:20, 20 minutes late. And Bernstein says to him, "Rabbi, time is money. You kept me waiting 20 minutes. You'll now wait for me 20 minutes. Slightly taken aback, although not unmindful of the truth behind his chastisement, he says to, I don't want to paraphrase it, he says to Mr. Bernstein, "Yes, time is money, but we can't waste time. If you're punishing me and making me waste 20 minutes, let's do it a different way. Let's take the next 20 minutes and learn Torah together." And he describes how they start learning. They're using a chumash, and there's a big sign above Bernstein's chair, "No smoking." And he was smoking the largest cigar I ever saw in my life. So I asked him, "How can you have a sign, no smoking, and you're smoking this tremendous cigar?" He said, "It means no smoking, no cigarettes. It doesn't say no cigars. Furthermore, it's my office. I make the rules." And then he orders in lunch. For the rabbi, he orders in kosher pizza, whatever. And for himself, he orders in a cheeseburger. Could you imagine? And as they're learning together, he's cursing like a sailor. And Rabbi Riskin says that your language is offensive to me. So he tells Rabbi Riskin, "You know what? Every time I use an off-color word, you can fine me $18. And at the end of the shayur together, He now owes Stucker $180. So we asked Rabbi Riskin, who should I make the check out to? And Rabbi Riskin says, Chabad. Rabbi J.J. Hecht, if you recognize the name from Chabad, received the check for $1,800 at the conclusion of our first session. And he pleaded with me to keep on learning and let Zalman keep on cursing for the good of the cause. So there was money involved, but that's how the relationship began, and it turned into a great blessing for the Jewish people. Okay, now I want to come back to the Shaila, and we're dealing here with Reb Menashe Klein. As I mentioned, I'll just repeat it, there are a few new faces here. Reb Menashe Klein is a posek that many people don't give proper credit to. The reason is very simple. He stands in his own Dalaramot, and the fact that you have a Riven today in many big cities, including Brooklyn, is only due to Reb Menashe Klein. He took on Reb Moshe, fought with Reb Moshe, and we spoke about it in great depth years ago. What a machlokes l'shem shemayim, but it required guts on the part of Reb Menashe Klein. He was above and beyond, never let himself be mired in the terrible world of politics. And what's amazing about his 18 volumes of Shelton Shivet, and I've gone through every last page in the 18 volumes, as a matter of fact, the set we have downstairs, I donated to Gris in memory of my mother. When my mother died a number of years ago, so my brother and I both took a certain amount of money, and my brother used it for his son's yeshiva. His son was a Rosh Yeshiva, a yeshiva that had originally been in the Gush, and now it's reestablished, Reb Hillel Rothkopf, and I used it for Gris. And that set is a fascinating set. What's amazing about Reb Menashe Klein, and he's an Ungarische, and he's a devotee of the Chatam Sofa, and Reb Menashe Klein, you have to understand, his best friend and the person who looked up to him was Eli Wiesel. When you read Eli Wiesel's memoir, he says, whenever I had to turn to a rabbi, I turned to Reb Menashe Klein. They met in the death camps. They were together in Paris after the war. And he answers every question from every person. He could be friendly with Satma Chassidim and at the same time friendly with YU graduates. And you see it in his tshuva, black and white. He, Dov Frimmer, the name Dov Frimmer, again, it's a new generation of YU students, but Dov Frimmer was a product of the 70s. He's a very well-known lawyer, attorney in Yerushalayim today. And he was on very close terms with Reb Menashe Klein, and he answers everything. So this question that we started with last week, and we're dealing with Reb Menashe Klein, Mishnah Halachot. By the way, those who oppose Reb Menashe Klein, they call his farim Mishana Halachot. You understand? They have got to give him a dig. Mishana Halachot. I say to those who oppose him, you can argue with them halachically, but the man knows Shas backwards and forwards, a photographic memory, all that goes with it. So in Mishnah Halachot, Chelik Tetvav, Siman Chafhei, he has a question from Tel's Yeshiva, which is amazing that from Tel's Yeshiva, a hotbed of Litvish learning, they turn to Reb Menashe Klein. And the Shaila there was was a famous Kaddish Shaila that the Yeshiva had a tradition, people die, either they don't have children, or the children are intermarried, or the children couldn't care less about saying Kaddish for parents. God have mercy, what has happened due to the reform and conservative movements. And you're all aware of it. It's not a secret. It's tangible. It's something you see day in and day out. So these people, I told you, the Rav told the story. When the Rav told the story, you felt you were watching it with your own two eyes. The Rav told the story about a lady in Boston who every day, every week, gave him a few quarters. And he said to her, why are you so makpida that you want a monument, a plaque in the shul after you die? And she said, Rabbi, my children have nothing to do with Yiddishkeit. They're not going to say Kaddish for me. This way, there'll be a Kaddish, there'll be a Kilmale. So they in Tells, there was this person who was hired to say Kaddish for people who left money for the yeshiva. Dominican tells was only one Kaddish is to be said, only one person at a time. And the person saying the Kaddish in memory of people who asked the yeshiva, that person could not be a chiyuv. He had to be totally someone who had to say Kaddish in memory of these people. Suddenly the person saying Kaddish, one of his parents dies, he's now a chiyuv, but he doesn't want to give up his chazakah. He's getting paid to say Kaddish. He doesn't want to give up the money. So they ask Rabbi Menashe Klein what to do. Rabbi Menashe Klein says openly, all this depends upon minhag. Halachically, logically, rationally speaking, what does it matter if a person is saying Kaddish for one person, two people, 100 people? As long as he has kavanah for these people, the Kaddish should be good. And he brings a proof from the Gemara in Eruvin, something when we all daven when it's Yontif and Shabbos. You don't say Elokeinu v'kavoteinu twice. You say once, Baruch Ata Hashem Mekadesh Shabbat v'Yisrael v'Hazmanim. It's one prayer that takes in Shabbat and Yontif. So the same thing with Kaddish. But if that's the minhag, that's the minhag. Okay, now let me move sideways. Reb Menashe Klein refers to a Noda B'Yehuda. And like I ended off the class last week, when you deal with the Noda B'Yehuda, you're in the big leagues. And this is something that you have to understand, that many people, it's not like Rav Avadya Yosef. Rav Avadya Yosef deals with every Achron imaginable. The Litvisha Poskim were very limited in what they dealt with Achronim. But the Chatam Seifa and the Noda B'Yehuda, you could not skip over. They had an authority that was second to none. So here, I want to quote from the Noda B'Yehuda, Rabbi Yecheskel Landau. Some of you may be related to him. There are a lot of Jews walking around, including I have grandchildren who are Einiklach of the Noda B'Yehuda. A lot of Jews have the Yechis. And a lot of them are from, I don't know what the percentage is, but I would be willing to say 80 to 85% of, say the Noda B'Yehuda are still showing the Torah mitzvah this man has there. So I'm quoting from the Noda B'Yehuda, I'm quoting from the Orech Chaim in the second edition of the Noda B'Yehuda, Mahadurat Hanita, I'm quoting Siman Chet. And it's amazing the question the Noda B'Yehuda gets. And what we see in this tshuva, way beyond the formal halacha. Because again, it's a shaila with Kaddish. And the Noda B'Yehuda raises his hands and says clearly, there's no source for this. It's all minhag. But watch the question. One of the people in his kehila died, and both the man and woman died together, or died within weeks of each other. Doesn't state exactly, but within weeks of each other, and they have no children, no one to say Kaddish. So the family hired a Melamed, and the Melamed should say Kaddish for them. Now, what do you see from this? Right away, you see that a Melamed never, he's not making a good living. He's not a dentist. He's not a doctor. He's not an insurance broker. He's not making a good living. He has to supplement his living. So he supplements his living. They hire him to say Kaddish. Okay? So he's saying Kaddish for a man and a woman from that community. Fine. Then there's another resident of the community who had a son who was not yet married. And this son was doing business in another community. And when he died, and remember, you're dealing here before antibiotics. Death was much more common. Today we take for granted, you take women. Look what you said, Bamem Madlikin, that a woman is, why do women die in childbirth? And they try Hadlakatanea, right? Chala, etc. And women died in childbirth. When I was growing up in Yeshiva Salanta in the Bronx, it was not uncommon to have a student whose mother was not really his mother, was his aunt. His mother died in childbirth, And the minhag Yisrael was that if a mother died in childbirth and there was an unmarried sister, she would marry the widower. And why a sister? Because the sister would raise the children like her own. It's a mother's sister. It's the closest relative you can have on that level. Childbirth was makom sakana. Today, Baruch Hashem, with medicine and antibiotics, we've come a long way. And here, a young kid is doing business, not married, in a neighboring community, and he dies. So now, you have the father who wants to say Kaddish, and you have the Malamed who's saying Kaddish for two people. And like all good Jews, once you're only limited to one person saying Kaddish, they're having a little bit of a fight. Who gives you the right to say two Kaddishim? These aren't your relatives. It's a mother and father who the cousins hired you. Whatever, the estate was left, the beitin, you know, if no one can inherit, we have a case like that now, who will be in charge? So the beitin takes over. In Israel, it's the court that takes over. And they hired you to say Kaddish. I'm saying for my son. And they are fighting. And they turn to the Rav and the Kehila, and the Rav paskins that the one that's saying Kaddish for the mother and father, he has two zchuyot. The other one who's saying for his son only has one skut, so that the Malamed who was hired has the right to say two Kaddishim, and the father saying for the son has the right only to one Kaddish, one third of the Kaddishim. Two thirds, one third. Now, is this fair? Is this logical? The Malamed is saying for two people, but they're not his relatives. The father is saying for his son. It's his son. It's a blood relative. But the rabbi, paskening the shaila, and he's telling the Noda B'Yehuda why he paskin, what he paskin, so the rabbi, Simon, is telling the Noda B'Yehuda, listen carefully. He says, the truth of the matter is, the father of the son who died may not have any rights at all. Why? The son is not in the community. He went elsewhere. What right does the father have to demand Kaddish? Your son, we're talking about Lawrence, and your son is working in Teaneck. He doesn't come home except for the Shlosh Regalim. Right or wrong? Interesting. More than that, tell me, does a father have to say Kaddish for a son? The whole purpose of Kaddish is that the son should be Mezakeh D'Av. That Ribbono Shel Olam, there's not one person alive that's Kula Tzadik V'lo Chata. Ein Tzadik V'aretz. All of us have some sins. So if the son says Kaddish, he's telling the Ribbono Shel Olam, go easy on my father. He left a good son. I daven, I say Kaddish. It's a skut for the father. Tell me, can the father help the son? What does one have to do with the other? Tell me, Avraham Avinu, what are we going to punish Avraham Avinu because he had a son named Esav? Yitzchak Avinu, who had a son named Esav? How are we going to punish the father?
But this is nonsense. Why would the father be worse than a paid man?
Relax. We'll talk about that. We'll get there with the paid nut. But these are the rabbi's talking. He's trying to justify. Furthermore, why do you have to say Kaddish for a kid? The kid died under 20. If you're under 20, no, you're not responsible for your behavior yet. God can't punish you. And this rabbi is giving all the reasons to the Noda B'Yehuda why he paskin what he did. Okay. Now, let's talk about the note. Did you want to ask anything? What's your first name?
Moshe.
Moshe, did you want to ask anything?
Yeah, the Gemara in Sota says that David davened for Absalom. You can.
Davening is a little bit different than saying Kaddish when you want to ameliorate sins that may have happened. Davening means l'chatchila, everything should go well. There's a difference. But say, hold off. Let me deal with the Nod Yehuda, and it will answer your question. Yes, Simon.
I think I missed a point where you just said, you're saying that it's less in the purpose of Kaddish to say for a son versus a father? Is that what you suggested?
That's what the rabbi is telling the Rabbi Yehuda, that a father, you have an obligation to say for your parents, but no father has an obligation to say Kaddish for a son.
What was the logic there?
For a parent, you want to be mizakehim in Olam Haba. But a father, a son stands on his own. You can't be mizake him. It's your son. If he did bad, what does that have to do with you? You understand? It's not the relationship of a son in relation to his father. The father in relation to a son, they're two different entities. And a son has an obligation, kibud aviyim. There's no obligation, kibud ben ubat. But I think all your questions will fall away in a second. Let's talk about the Nod Yehuda for a second, and the source is fascinating, and all this, I'm paraphrasing it, but it's word by word the Nod Yehuda. Rabbi Cheskel Landau. Rabbi Cheskel Landau was, in contemporary terms, Kulo Litvak. If you recall my lectures in the Monday class on the Jewish Theological Seminary in New York, so he spoke many times about the difference between their two most famous teachers were Reb Shaul Lieberman, Professor Lieberman, and Professor Avram Yoshua Heschel. Okay, Professor Heschel was coming from a big Hasidic background. Who was his father? The Kapishnitzer Rebbe. Who was his brother? The Kapishnitzer Rebbe. Heschel, you all recognize the name. This is a very big Hasidic family. For him, Hasidus, Kabbalah, played a very big role in his outlook. Reb Shaul Lieberman, who was a first cousin to the Chazon Ish, was Kulo Litvak. And he looked upon Professor Heschel as a total Amoritz. He would quote Kabbalah and philosophy and Agadah, and Professor Lieberman was Kulo Shas in Peskim and Halacha, and nothing else counts. I may be oversimplifying it, but this was essentially two different personalities. The Nod Yehuda was, in today's language, you would say Kulo Litvak. What's the famous example which everyone quotes and cites? What was one of the big chidushim of the Hasidic world? They came in, and before you do a mitzvah, you make a bracha, and you say all these hininis, all these l'shem yichud. No, before you take, did you ever see a Hasidic rabbi take lulav and etrog? He spends 20 minutes on the L'shem Yichud before he gets to the bracha. Did you ever see a Litvish Rosh Yeshiva take a lulav and etrog? All right, takes him a minute and a half. He says the bracha with tremendous kavana. That's it. You're done. Did you ever see were you ever at the Chofetz Chaim's table? Tell me, Binyamin, were you ever at the Chofetz Chaim's table? Friday night, I was there. You know what happened Friday night? You walked in, you sat down, and he made Kiddush. Where's the Shalom Aleichem? Where? In the middle of the meal, he said Shalom Aleichem to be Yotze the Gemara in Shabbos. He writes this in the Mishnah Berurah, that people are hungry. You have guests, they're hungry. You ever go to a nainikul from big Hasidic Rebbeim, Rebbeinu Shalom, until he reached the Motzi, you could die from starvation. what he didn't say, what he didn't mumble. Oh my gosh. Wow. Unbelievable. Didn't know to be who the, when he was asked about the L'shem Yichud, he said, Halavai, they should say the bracha with Kavanah. Forget about everything else. And it's a famous tshuva. I can't go into more detail. I spoke about it 20, 30 years ago in the Kol. There's a lot more detail on that. But that's the gist of it. So the Nod Mishuda here gets very upset with this rabbi. What are you getting involved with Kabbalistic concepts? A father, a son? You're concerned. How do you know? B'kiv shei de nachmana lamali, according to Maran Chagiga, the secrets of God. It's a father, a son, a father. A father can't help a son. You follow me, Moshe? What are you, how can you state these things? He's not 20 years of age, so God is not going to punish him. This is not halacha. And he says, these type of considerations should not enter into the picture. But more important, and now I take you back to what I said last week. I think Rabbi Grunstein. Well, relax. I think Rabbi Grunstein asked me the question. Let me see, or Rabbi, it's Nachum Lem asked me the question. On American Jewish History, Professor Jonathan Sonnet tells a story that when he was starting out, he told someone, I think it was you, that he was going into American Jewish history and was told by that person, what? They came to America, they intermarried, and became Goyim. That's all. And Nachum Lem asked me, who said that? I can tell you who said that. Professor Agus, that's exactly what he said. When I was a junior in college, they announced a $50 bond for the best research in a Jewish history. And I did research on the 1924 rabbinical visit to America that I spoke about last year. And you should know that Agus got hysterical. You cannot award the prize to Rothkopf. There's no such thing as American Jewish history. Forget it. They came, they intermarried, and they disappeared. And so in order to tell that to Herzog, the new head of the Jewish agency, he better learn quickly what Reform Judaism is about. I don't want to go further. Whether Agus was right or wrong, this was Agus. So remember I quoted him last week that you can rewrite Jewish history from the responsa literature. Now you'll see an example. The Noda B'Yehuda spends endless time now. What's this concept that you can't count him because he moved away? And now we learn how the Jews had to live. Do you know that he had to move away because his older brother was married? And in this part of Austro-Hungary where this took place, you are not allowed to have two Jewish families new married. If the older brother got married, anyone else who has to get married has to move away. And you see Jewish life. He says the Gentiles insist upon this. They don't want too many Jews. They're not moving away because they want to. They're moving away because of extraneous constraints that have nothing to do with the realistic lifestyle they would really like. Not only that, he says, where do you ever see this enter into the halacha? People can't control their own lives here. The government is punishing them. We cannot add to this disgrace by saying, yeah, your father died here, your mother died here, but you live in a different city. You don't count. You follow me? The Noda B'Yehuda, what a description of life. And this explains to you why you can have people from one family, two, three, four men, and each one has a different last name. That was done so the government shouldn't recognize, yeah, the older brother got married. Well, that's not my brother. His name is Landau. My name is Felix. Felix gets married. The third brother says, no, that's not my brother. My name is Rothkopf. The fourth brother says, no, those are not my brothers. We're distant cousins. My name is Reuben. You follow? And you see it here in the tshuva, and he's furious with this rabbi who makes the case, he doesn't live here, he doesn't live here, he doesn't count. What do you mean he doesn't count? Why doesn't he live here? This is not choice. His hand was forced. It's the government. These are anti-Semitic laws. They want to keep the Jewish population down. But to allow it to affect the halacha, he will not give this cognizance. He does not accept it. Halacha l'maisa, he quotes the Magen Avraham. Everyone quotes the Magen Avraham. The Magen Avraham, you'll see, is Orech Chaim, Siman Kuf Lamed Bet, Siv Katan Bet. And subdivision in the Magen Avraham, it's also Bet. You'll see the Magen Avraham quotes the Levush, and he gives a whole list of possibilities with Kaddish. Who comes first? Who gets the Kaddish? Who do you have to honor? And the Noda B'Yehuda says, this is all minhag. And what we have to do when we have something new, a situation like this, we have to use logic. And logic, and this is what he paskins, very simple. The Melamed Hussein Kaddish for a man and a woman from mother and father, he has two shares because he's saying for two people. The father only has one share. He's saying for his son. I agree with you. It's a third and two-thirds. But not for the reasons you're giving. Not because he lives in a different community. Not because it's a father for a son and God doesn't need a kaddish. It's only a son for a father. All these reasons don't count. Pure halacha? Forget about the Kabbalah. Forget about the Lashem Yichuds. Forget about going into God's mind. Pure halacha? 2-1 in favor of the Melamed. Now, one other point.
But
very.
The Melamed says Kaddish for strangers. Herbie,
you're suffering from the illness known as Savlanitis. It's exactly what I want to touch upon this very moment. As far as the relationship, I'll make Herbie's question even stronger. A father and son is a blood relationship.
Exactly.
This guy was hired. He's getting paid. Giving him 2-1? My dear students, both Reb Menashe Klein reaches this conclusion, but he's quoting the Noda B'Yehuda. The Noda B'Yehuda says very simply, there really is no chiyuv to say Kaddish. Kaddish is a minhag. We'll come back to this in a few minutes. There's no source in all of Shas that a son is obligated to say Kaddish for parents. Kaddish has nothing to do with the dead people, nothing to do with death, nothing to do with Olam Haba. Kaddish is a schut. Yitgadal v'yitgadal shemei rabah bi'alma. It's in this world that the parents left the child who's praising God. Alright, so the minute developed, the children should add to the schut of the parents by praising God in this world. But there's no obligation. On the other hand, when you're hired to do something, you've made a contract. You have an obligation. Yeshiva, I know, I don't know what goes on today, but I know Yeshiva University used to actually have a contract. They got good money for arranging a student to say Kaddish. That student is not saying Kaddish because of Minhag. He is saying Kaddish because he signed a contract. And when you sign a contract, you have a real obligation. The people who hired you, Kaddish, play it down. Where's the chiyuv? Where's the source? But that doesn't matter. They're giving you money. You made a contract. You're obligated. So therefore, Herbie, the father of the child, despite the fact that it's a blood relationship, one third. The Malamed who was hired and getting money and I hope being paid properly, he signed a contract.
I still don't believe that.
When you say, this is...
You never make me change my mind.
What you're saying is that we could solve the problem and add to the father that it's not just the father son, but there's a contractual agreement. And I say to you, ach and vey, if we have to reach the stage that children have to sign a contract with their parents that they're going to say Kaddish.
Believe me, it would be
very, very sad. But halacha lemaisa, Reb Menashe Klein ends off his tshuva, that logically speaking, we can't give a halachic decision here. It all depends upon minhag. And halachically speaking, he sees nothing wrong and tells yeshiva, if the orphan who say in Kaddish now lost his father, he can say one Kaddish for everyone. But if the minig of the yeshiva was from time immemorial that the person basucked what they called the yeshivish Kaddish, then if that's the minhag, he's not allowed to say for anyone else, continue the minhag. And that's what Reb Menashe Klein answers. And this is, with these questions, we always have to go back to minhag. And now I want to a little further and show you something that happened here. And so all these comments I got, I think it was, again, Nachum Lam. Nachum Lam wrote to me. And I heard years ago, I believe from Reb Heschel Shachta, but it needs to be investigated. When the Nodeb Yehuda was asked, who has the right of the way for Kaddish when only one person says Kaddish? The Nodeb Yehuda answered, quote, flip a coin. When they said the Shulchan Aruch has very clear rules who goes first, he answered, how do you think he came up with the rules? In the same way, he flipped the coin. And here I want to tell you something. No, I'll give you a book. Hold off, Simon, 1 second. I have to get names. There's one person I'm looking at. I don't know your name yet. 1 second. My dear students, sometimes stories about Gedolei Yisrael... I once spoke with Moriah Rebbe, with the Rav, about this. So the Rav said, I quote Rebbe, the Rav said, it's not important whether the studies are true or not, but this is what the people believed. And sometimes you take a story and you'll hear it about this gadol and that gadol and the third gadol and the fourth gadol. And I'll give you an example with the Rav, a beautiful example. Some of you know that in Germany, a lot of people confuse the Rav with the German viewpoint, Torum Derech Eretz. Right. Again, whenever I mention these concepts, I'm tempted to give a lecture for the next year on it. But I can't do that. I'm just mentioning the Rav had a different shita. It was not Torum Derech Eretz. It resembled it. In volume 2 of my work on my Rebbe, you'll see I translated the Rav from Yiddish to English, what the Rav really thought, the difference between him and Rav Hirsch. One of the early people who advocated Torum Derech Eretz in Germany was Rav Hirsch's Rebbe, Rav Yaakov Ettlinger. Have you heard the name? Make believe you did, so the ignorant pass for the wise. The Erech Lanea, the Binyan Zion, a great, great German Gadol, very open-minded. And he was a Rebbe of Rav Hirsch. So they say about Rav Yaakov Ettlinger, who had a tremendous fund of general knowledge, that some Polish Gedolim came to visit him, and they were flabbergasted that Rav Yaakov Ettlinger was a Gaon Adir, and he knew Latin, Greek, mathematics, etc. So they said to him, Rebbe, we wonder, where do you get the time to do all this? So he answered, the time you wonder is the time I spend doing my general studies in addition to Shas and Paiskim. Believe it, and I know this for many decades. If I'm 80 years of age, I know this for 60 years at least, this story. Actually, no. You know who's related to Rabbi Yaakov? You know Professor Steiner, Mark Steiner. Anyone know Professor? Not his brother who teaches at Rebbe, but Mark Steiner, retired from Hebrew U. His wife is an Ur Einikel of Rabbi Yaakov Ettlinger. She's a Freiman. They're great-great-grandchildren. So, many decades later, I can't believe my eyes, I see responsible people are telling the same story about the Rav. That while the Rav was in Berlin, great Rabbanim from Litte came to visit him to tell him off, why is he wasting his time? We spend time wondering, what are you doing in the University of Berlin? And the Rav answers, the time you spend wondering about what I'm doing in the University of Berlin, that's when I do my university work, and the rest of the time I'm in Shas and Paiskim. I don't believe the story ever happened with the Rav. To the best of my knowledge, no great Litvish Gedolim visited him. But the story, all right, makes sense. But why bother the Rav? Chaim Heller was sitting in Berlin. Rabbi Chil Yaakov Weinberg was sitting in Berlin. The Labarachi Rebbe was in Berlin. Rav Kalman Kahane, but he's not on the level. He's a Gedolim Gedolim. He was a wonderful individual. But there's so many great people in Berlin, you're not only going to ask the Rav. Rabbi Yaakov Ettlinger was already unique. Chachem B'nei's, Rabbi Yaakov Ettlinger were two of a kind. Okay. Why am I telling you this? Because what Nachum Lehm wrote to me, I can tell you, I was just in the United States. So I asked the favor of the person who helped me immensely where I was staying. I told him there's one sefer I want to master, and I can't bring it from Israel because it's literally too heavy. It's Benjamin Brown. You recognize the name. Binyamin they say Brown in English, Baron, I think, in Hebrew. He lives in Beit Shemesh. He did a doctorate at Hebrew U. It's published by Hebrew U and Kadosh Law School. He's Israeli, but evidently spent some time and has a connection with Kadosh. He is a genius of geniuses. It's over 1,000 pages. I can't even lift the book up. I need a great grandson to lift it for me on the Chazon Ish. Brilliant work, interesting work. So when I reached America, I was up to page 322. When I left America, I'm hitting page 600. Baruch Hashem, they borrowed the book from me. It was there when I arrived, and I left it for them to return. Right there, where he's discussing the Chazon Ish and the Psak and what guides him in Psak, he tells exactly the same story. That one time two people were fighting over who should say Kaddish, and the Chazon Ish, flip a coin. It means do a Gorav. Right. Flip a coin, like the Mishnah and Yoima, what the Kohanim used to do. So they said to Chazon Ish, how can the Chazon Ish paskin like that? There's so many sources. Look into the Magen Avraham, the Levush, what I just cited for you. The Chazon Ish said, and how do you think he reached the decisions he reached? He flipped the coin. So it's amazing how that story, now you heard it about the Nodeb Yehud, evidently they're referring to the Tshuva that I just quoted to you. And I heard it exactly, and you can look it up, it's in the Chazon Ish, Brown's book, right there about the Chazon Ish. Halacha l'maisa, I have to say, we're dealing with an amorphous question, and there's no doubt that minhag is more important than anything. And I want to go a drop further, but I just want to tell you from my own experience, when I went into the rabbinate, I was all of 23 years of age. Those days there was no kollel. We knew how to learn at an early age. I remember Rav Yosef Weiss telling me in 1953, if you don't know how to learn by the time you're 19, you'll never know how to learn, quote unquote. And we knew how to learn at an early age. It was a different generation. There was no art scroll and Sansino. If you ever try to learn a Daf Gemara with Sansino, you'd wind up crawling on the wall and gasping for breath and pleading for a little bit Coke to cheer you up. But all right, today it's a different generation. We have to live with reality. Dor v'dor shavas hadashim in America, the Gemara in Sanhedrin. Okay, so you talk about going into the rabbinate, young, not prepared. We had no courses, nothing. All we had was a course in homiletics. Outside of that, nothing whatsoever. Had a paskin, so I'll never forget my first rabbinate. A man comes over to me, a machalo Shabbos, but traditional background, and he has yurtzeit during Chodesh Adar. And that year there's an Adar Aleph and an Adar Bet. And he asks me when to hold the yahrzeit. And you know, there's a machlekes ha'poskim, which is the real Adar. The first Adar logically should be the real Adar. That, or is it the second Adar, which is closer to Pesach, closer to Geula, that's with Purim. Which Adar is? So a whole machlekes ha'poskim, achronim. If you look into the Kitzur Shulchan Aruch, it's best to hold the yahrzeit both months. And I told him, it's best to hold the yahrzeit both months. That guy walked away when he thought I wasn't looking. He spat to the ground and he called the rabbi the biggest idiot in the world to hold the yahrzeit both months. Binyamin, believe me, today if you would ask me to Shaila, I tell him you can flip a coin and hold it whichever month you want. You understand? A balabas, right from Yiddishkeit, this then, and I'm telling him hold the yahrzeit both months.
How do you know he held that way? You told the story, but how do you know he held that way?
How do I know what? How do
you
I saw the way he walked away, I saw what he said, that he whispered behind my back, and this is the hardest part of these Shailas, that you're dealing through with an amorphous issue. And finally, I just want to refer you that when all is said and done, the Kaddish is the least important. Yoredeya Shin Ayin Vav. I'm talking Sifkatan. Let me just see, that looks like very unclear, but it looks like Sifkatan Hey, and it's in the Ramah. And the Ramah says, yeah, there's a minhag today to say Kaddish for a mother and father. Look what the Ramah says. 12 months. And also to get maftir and to be mitpalel arid b'motzei Shabbat, shehu azman shechozrim ha'neshamot legehenim. And kishahaben mitalel mekadesh berabim podet avivi mo mingehenim, and he raises here an issue, and here too, you know, could you imagine the Ramah in the halacha? You're waiting for the souls to go back to Gehenim. The longer you delay Maariv Saturday night, the more the souls can rejoice out of Gehenim. They're not punished on Shabbos. And if the son davens for the Amid, then the Ribbono Shel Olam is very happy. He sees his son. Why should I punish the mother and father? The son is davening from the Amid. And I have to tell you that in Brown's dissertation on the Chazon Ish, they raised this very question with the Chazon Ish. And the Chazon Ish was makpid. The minute there were three stars, he's ready to daven Maariv, Motzei Shabbos. And evidently someone with Hasidic tendencies came over to the Chazon Ish and had to get up and given a shtickel ashtach. gave him, I don't know how to say it in English, you know, pierced him slightly and said, why are you delaying Marav? The earlier you daven, they won't go back to Gehenim. And the Chazon Ish says, don't worry about it. When I finish davening, the people from Gehenim are waiting for me right here. He's referring, you know, to the Balabatim and all the questions and all that bother him. But you see, even the Ramah, and even in his psak, he's getting involved with esoteric material. And then he deals with another problem, something that you've never thought of. How are you allowed to say Kaddish for your mother? Your father is still alive. Perhaps the father can be makpitz. So the Ramah says that, no, a mother is like a father. Just as the mother can't stop you for saying Kaddish for your father, the father can't stop you for saying Kaddish for your mother. In other words, you see, here too, you're dealing with superstition. You're dealing with something that is meta-halachic. It's not really halachic. Nachum Lamb writes that his father, my classmate, Ani Lamb, Avraham Lamb, they'll be here next Sunday, Be'ezrat Hashem. I'll tell you why later. Next Sunday is a little bit different. Nachum Lamb writes, an uncle died with no children. So Avraham was going to shul twice a day, wanted to say Kaddish for the uncle. His parents gave him permission. See, this is a very delicate issue, because the last thing in the world you want, you're alive and kicking, you're saying Kaddish? And here where mother and father are alive, you're saying Kaddish? But if they give permission, again, it's minhag. So even the Ramah Paskins, if they give permission, they're allowed. And if you go to Hilchat Avelut, that Ramah, and you take it at the very, very end, and again he says, whenever a question comes up in Kaddish, everything depends upon minhag. And he says, Kaddish you say during the week, Shabbos and Yontif. No davening for the Amid. What is the prevalent minhag among Ashkenazim? No avil davens for the Amid. Shabbos, Yontif, Chalamoid, Rosh Chodesh, Talui b'minhag, and Maishul, they daven Shachris, but from Halalan, someone else takes over. And then the Ramah says that if you know how to daven for the Amid, that's much more important than Kaddish. Kaddish is for a little kid to say who can't be a shliach tzibur, but a shliach tzibur who knows how to daven. What about if you don't have a good voice? So then at least the end of davening, Ashrei Lamanitzeach Uvolat Zion, he should do that. And he goes on and says, here he corrects himself, I'm amazed that no one shut me down when I quoted the Ramah before. Yud Beit Chodesh, Yud Aleph Chodesh. You don't say Kaddish more than Yud Aleph Chodesh, because the Gemara says that a person is punished for 11 months unless he's a Rasha Gomor. He can suffer 12 months. If you say Kaddish for your parents 12 months, it shows that you consider your parents a Rasha Gomor. And I know a case like that, I was so upset, you have no idea, that this kid, to use Simon's words that I corrected him last week about tshuva, so he was mad at his parents, his father was not properly from. So he got a psak. I don't know a person, I don't want to mention the name, because I can't believe he paskin that way. He said, Kaddish, 12 months. I looked at him, I said, your father sent you to yeshiva, sent you to day school, sent you to Israel, paid the money, supported you. How is your father raised? The Tinuk Shanishba. Kaddish, 12 months? So you see, the Ramah says that too. As a Litvak, I can only tell you what I do in memory of my mother. My father, I can't do it because it's Chalamayit Sukkot. It doesn't lend itself. But my mother, I never daven for the Yomid because it would be Tircha de Tzibura. it takes me longer to daven. For my father, what I do is I have my grandchildren daven for the yomitz. I think that when God looks down and sees my father's great-great-great-grandchildren davening for the Yomid, if I have it right, great-grandchildren, great-great, I don't know, I can't count all the generations, I think it's the greatest foot my parents can have. For my mother, I daven from Ashrei Valetzion, and I don't daven before that, and I make a siyum. Every year I make a siyum, and I give, I told you, I can't fast so easily anymore, so I do like a chassid. I give lekach. And now I want to end off with one little story that I've told you before, but now I want to tell it in context. Simon, the story doesn't go for nothing. It's 36,000 shekel to the IOU list. The Rebbe never collects, but you have to know. Ask you the mug and make and shop. I'm calling the Gemara. Dr. Wilson, nothing worth nothing. This story is precious. This story was told to me by Mrs. Revel. Mrs. Revel, we're only sitting here because of Mrs. Revel. Do you know what I'm saying, Binyamin? Rabbi Revel, who was the first shidduch in America in 1908, a guy came from Europe, a great Talmud Chacham, and there's a girl in Marietta, Ohio, raised in Marietta, a Flim family, and she's a tzaddikit, the young girl, Yiddishkeit. There were no yeshiva, went to public school, but from the house, you know, and really Flim lady, and 100%, and a wealthy family. That shidduch, and that enabled Revel later to come to yeshiva, to build, never took a salary until his family went bankrupt in the 20s, would stand it all, a whole story. So Mrs. Revel, when I started work on my doctorate, it was all contingent, where Bernard Landon, dean of the graduate school, made the appointment for me to see Mrs. Revel, and it was all contingent that there was material available, which there was. So we got to know each other very well, Mrs. Revel, and your humble servant. And one time she told me, she was in a state of shock. In 1924, the Kovner Rav stayed at her house. Rav Avram Dovir Kahane Shapira, the Dava Avraham we're talking about. The one who gave Mori Rebbe Rav Soloveitchik Smicha is from the Kovner Rav. So go on, dear. And the Kovner Rav stayed with them in the Broadmoor Hotel, 102nd and Broadway. We're going back almost 100 years, 90 plus years. And one time Rabbi Revel said, they were talking and learning, and Rabbi Revel said, we have to hurry, I got to catch Mincha, I have to say Kaddish. And the Kovner Rav says to him, what? You also hold from this Narishkeit of Kaddish? And Mrs. Revel was in a state of shock. The Kovner Rav, she raised in America, without Kaddish, there wouldn't be a shul in the United States before World War II. And she was in a state of shock. And she told me the story. Well, Mrs. Revel, I hope you're listening, but the Kovner Rav's given a kalta litvak. He's correct. What he told you is absolutely right. But you're also right. Without the Kaddish, we would not be here today. Ad kan, this fabulous question and the interaction of the Nodeb Yehuda, the Mishnah Halachat, and everything around it. And this is what they paskin lahalacha. Okay, before I go further, I just want to pause for a moment. Those of you that will be attending my classes, Be'ezrat HaNotein L'Yov Koach, please write your name clearly and write your email address so that if there's ever a problem that I can't come and I'm older, like last year I think I had to call off a class, I had no voice, had a cold. I think the year before my wife fell and broke a cartilage, I was in the hospital, so if we have to reach you, we can have an email address. Vic, you want to take this, please, and start the... Okay, that's number one. Number two. And it's just a shame that we only have a smattering from the Kolel. It's a shame, but nothing can be done. It's a lost battle. I see the reaction I get from kids. A kid walks into my office. I can't even repeat the story. It's unbelievable, though. Alex Glassman happens to be right in this case. next week, I'm beginning this year, eulogizing a graduate of the Kollel to whom some of you owe a tremendous debt. You'll see why. Yosef Kloisner, Harav Yosef Chaim Kloisner Yedidja, went hebraized his last name, but evidently not legally, but used Yedidja in addition to Klausner. He died without having married, without any children, and it's very, very sad. And I'd like to say a few words about him. And next week is more or less the Shloshim. We really don't know the day he died because the body was found. He was in the Beis Medrash, in his house, in Talis and Tefillin, lying on the floor. The police estimate he was dead 2 days, 3 days. But next week is the Shloshim, no matter what. And Sunday, I'll say words of eulogy. Before the regular shiur, maybe 20 minutes, and then we'll go into the regular class. Have you heard the name? Has his name been mentioned here? Anyone? Unbelievable. How old is he? 60. If not 60, 61. Very sad, very sad. It was written up in one of the weekend freebies. Okay. Let's go further. Moshe, have you ever been in the rabbinate? What do you know about the rabbinate? How long have you lived in Israel?
I've lived here 11 years.
11 years. So you came before Bar Mitzvah or right after Bar Mitzvah?
No, I was
14. 14. Right after Bar Mitzvah. All right. Rabbi Reuben, we're in the rabbinate now. Tell me, did you announce pages? You're dealing here with the American rabbinate. You know, don't think the American rabbinate is only Teaneck and only Flatbush and only Borough Park. The American rabbinate, Eti, your father, did he announce pages?
All the time.
So I want to ask you a serious question now. Are you allowed to interrupt the davening and announce pages? This is... And I can tell you, Charlie Hextad, he's in tomorrow's class. He lives in Rehovot, so he can't exactly get in every day. But Dr. Hextad, one time...
Is he related to
Shemo? Ask him, I believe so. I think all the Hextas are related. Heckscher in Hebrew, Hexter in German. I believe all the Hextas are related. So... 4 years ago, Bernard Revel Graduate School honored me, Baruch Hashem. I acknowledge it with humility. So, we're flying into New York, and Charlie and I are on the same plane. So I said to Charlie, there's going to be a car waiting for me, and come with me to the yeshiva. And it's pouring rain. So my wife, myself, and Charlie are in the car. We get to YU, and it's already maybe 8:45. It took an hour and a half to get there from JFK because of the rain, maybe 2 hours. And we're looking for a minyan. So we're told there's only one minyan that we can still catch in First Hall, if I recall. It's a minyan of the Jewish Studies program. And we come to this minyan in Yeshiva University, and there we are in Yeshiva University, in the minyan. And there's the Chatam Sofer Sfarim, there's a library on the side. And this is a minyan led by Rabbi Simcha Willig, and they're announcing pages. And they get up to Yishtabach, and before Yotzah Ar, they're explaining the davening. I hope I remember correctly. Charlie, correct me if I'm wrong. They didn't announce before Shmon Esrei in the morning. Am I right, Charlie? We'll know tomorrow. I don't think they announced then. And then we get to the Hallel. Binyamin, let me tell you, I was slaughtered. They get to the Hallel, they take out the clay zema, they take out the, what do you call, give me, not a violin, what do they call it?
Ukulele.
Guitar. What else is it called?
A banjo,
what else?
Well, what else did I call it? A guitar. Oh my gosh, hollow with music, and there's the Chatam Sofer's forum staring at them. The Chatam Sofer Asid playing a musical instrument in shul, even on a Wednesday. Against the reform, of course. And here I couldn't believe my eyes or my ears, and I stumbled into this minion, and you should have seen Rabbi Willick go, and he had them excited. And this is a serious question. And tell me, what is our minhag? At night, Rosh Chodesh, you're davening at the Shtiblach, 7-8 people scream out, Yalla v'yavo. But at night, it's not a big shayla, because you're allowed to be mafsik. There's no winyan of smichat gula l'tfila. Excuse me, I can't hear. La halacha minig Yisrael is at night they yell out yalla v'yalla. And if you want to be smart and avoid the yelling out, but you need an audience that knows what you're doing, it's very simple. The final Kaddish, say with the niggin of Yalla V'Yavo. You find, say it a little differently. Say it yontiftik. That tells the people you have to say Yalla V'Yavo. But this is the question. And I have to tell you, this is not a simple question, because you're talking, the shuls fill up, Rosh Hashanah, Yom Kippur. You're getting people, by and large, who have very little understanding of what davening is about. What I used to do before Rosh Hashanah, adult education, I would start a month before trying to explain the Musaf of Rosh Hashanah. And if you can explain and get them involved, but this is few and far between. This is a very serious question. And here it is. Reb Menashe Klein has to deal with this very question. We're dealing with Mishnah Halachat Chelik Bet Siman Ayin. And he's writing to a Rav Gertzelin, Mashgiach Ruchani, it's a well-known name, Gertzelin. And why is he writing to him? Because evidently the Torah Vedas Rabbanim in the field had these very same questions. Now, let me say a few words. Yeah. Yes.
In Israel, everybody has a different mitzvah.
Right.
When you announce a page, it doesn't help
anybody. No, but here in Israel, unfortunately, the people who come to daven are the people who know how to daven and know what they're doing. Here, the shayla would come up with Soha. Soha runs special davenings throughout the country. There, they all use the same marksa, and they announce pages, and they explain. But the average shul here, unfortunately, Israel is very different than America. America, if you don't go to temple, Rosh Hashanah, Yom Kippur, you don't know you're a Jew. There's no way. That's to show you still consider yourself Jewish. Here, you know very well, who has to go to shul? I speak Hebrew, I curse in Hebrew, I laugh in Hebrew, I serve in the army, I do my banking in Hebrew. I'm a Jew, no matter what. I don't need a shul. This is the difference, which is not a happy statement, but it's a reality. But Soha tries to reach out. Yes?
They have the signs now in a lot of shuls, the numbers.
Yeah, we'll talk about that. There are pages that you can flip, which conservative temples use electronic pages. To them, electricity is not a problem on Yom Kippur, Lo Aleinu. But the pages you can flip, we'll see, the Chivit mentioned it. But I want to say a few words about Torah Vedas. Yes?
I recall that the man now known to you as the chief rabbi of Dimona, Rabbi Yitzchak Elefant,
right,
when he served as the gabbai in the minyan by Rav Tovia Goldstein,
right,
of Emek Halacha, we had the yeshiva was housed in a building that had a pre-existing minyan
right.
from Bensonhurst.
Right.
And Yitzchak, now Rabbi Yitzchak, would call out, this is under Rabtovia, would call out, you know, pages in the
right,
right.
Right, okay. Chumash is not a shayla, because you can interrupt. The problem is once you begin Baruch Shema. That's where the problem really is. Okay, let me just say a few words about Torah Vadas so you can understand. It seems Mashkiach Ruchani Torah Vadas. You look at it, you wonder, what is Torah Vadas? How did they get involved in questions like this? What people don't realize is that Torah Vadas originally began as a Mizrahi institution. It was called Torah Vadas. The very name Torah Vadas was to remind you of Rav Reines in Lida. Rav Reines, as you all know, was a graduate of Volozhin. Rav Reines was a great Talmud Chacham, but he was the founder not only of Mizrahi religious Zionism, but he built the yeshiva and leader before World War I, which was very broad, as its name states, Torah Vidat. It was a precursor to what today is Yeshiva University. With World War I, that yeshiva came to an end. It was never reestablished. YU gained a great deal out of that yeshiva, because the Rosh Yeshiva of the High Yeshiva in Gemara was Rav Shlomo Palachek, the Meitzer Te'ilui, whom all of Europe knew as the Talmud Mufak of Rav Chaim Briska. The Meitzer Te'ilui, Rav Chaim said about the Meitzer Te'ilui, as a modern Ilui Habachnishke Zener, my Gansalabim, such a unique Ilui I never saw in my whole life. The Meitzer Te'ilui learned b'chavruta by Reb Chaim with Reb Yehuda Leib Foyer. Reb Yehuda Leib Foyer comes to America after the Meitzer Te'ilui because he saw the Meitzer Te'ilui came to America in 1922 to become the Rosh Yeshiva of YU. So he saw that if he could go to America, I could go to America. And that's a Rabbi Yehuda Foyer winds up in Holyoke, Massachusetts. And as I've said many times, arguably he may have been the greatest gadol ever to set foot in the United States. The Rav stood in awe of Rabbi Yehuda Leib Foyer. Reb Lazer Silver would not paskin a difficult shaila without consulting Rabbi Yehuda Leib Foyer. My classmate, the Harav, Dr. Professor Chaim Soloveitchik, known to you as Dr. Grach, said that his father always consulted the Yehuda Leib Foyer when he had a difficult question. And the Meitzer was from Torah Vadas in Lida. After World War I, when he saw they couldn't reestablish, he had difficulty. He was in Bialystok, he was in Tachkamoni in Bialystok, but it wasn't on the level that Lida had been. And that's why in 1922, when Rabbi Revel pleaded with him to come to America, the Meitzer Te'ilui was willing to come to America. Now, Torah Vadas, the very fact that they took that name, shows you who established Torah Vadas. They wanted something in Brooklyn that would be like what you think of when I say Yeshiva Shev Zichol Chanan. They wanted in Brooklyn a yeshiva, then they had a high school, finally they got to a metifta, and Torah Vadas until well after World War II was a junior sister to what today is Yeshiva University. I realize it's hard for you to grasp that, but those are the facts. The facts are such that in one time in Torah Vadas, there were the Malachim. I see I'll have to end off with the Malachim. Anyone know what I'm talking about, the Malachim?
Yes.
The Malachim were a sect in America that became very from American kids. And they didn't want college, they didn't want high school. And they threw them out of Torah Vadas. And there's a tshuva from Rabbi Lamb's great uncle, or uncle I should say, Rabbi Baumel. There's a tshuva in print giving Torah Vadas permission to throw them out because they were hurting the spirit of the yeshiva and what they were trying to inculcate their students with. And these graduates from the 20s, the 30s, the 40s went into the American rabbinate. And I'm ashamed to tell you, many of the graduates were no longer in Orthodox shoes. We'll talk about this tomorrow. I may reach it tomorrow in class in a different context. But many of these graduates had conservative shtelas. Some of them even became Reform rabbis, lo aleinu. There's a simple example. You've heard the name Rabbi Moshe Scherer? No? Gentlemen, who was Rabbi Moshe Scherer? The man who built Agudat Yisrael in America, Rabbi Maris Scherer, who is Rabbi Maris Scherer's older brother. He just died a year or two ago, over 100 years of age. Rabbi Harry Scherer. Who was Rabbi Harry Scherer? Torah Vadas graduate, Reform rabbi, performed intermarriage ceremonies, Jew and Gentile. Torah Vadas graduate. Understand?
Irving
Agus,
Dr. Irving
Agus,
his brother was Jacob
Agus. Yeah, but Jacob Agus is not a Torah Vadas graduate. We're talking about, but this was Torah Vadas. Later, by the 50s, with the immigrants coming in, Torah Vadas starts to move more Hasidic, what you would say, more right-wing. Mr. Mendelovich always said, "Vilna Pintala Chassidus." I want a little bit Chassidus in Torah Vadas. Today, excuse me? Yeah, well, today, if you walked into Torah Vadas, it's more than a little Chassidus. It's a different institution altogether. But this is why the question comes up, because Torah Vadas people were all over the United States. They were in shuls and temples all over the country, and those who were Elich felt this was a tremendous question. Can they announce pages? And above all, Rosh Hashanah Yom Kippur. And that's why they turned to Rabbi Gertzelin, who was the Mashgiach of Torah Vadas, and he turns to the Mishnah Halachot with this very question. And I have to tell you, it is a very, very long tshuva. And it gets involved with the Noda B'Yehuda we will see, and then we'll compare what the Mishnah Halachad answers with Reb Moshe Feinstein. And you find two different worlds entirely. The Mishnah Halachad, very little empathy for what's going on in the United States. He's in Brooklyn. He's in Hasidic, semi-Hasidic Hungarian world. Reb Moshe, he's on the Lower East Side, but somehow Reb Moshe's 10 fingers are much more, I would say, sensitized to the American reality. Very fascinating. And we get involved here in questions that can haunt you as far as outreach goes, those of you from NCSY, etc. It's unbelievable, but give us time. So before I reiterate, let me just see Vix Nochaim, Molfati Levingston, Yitzhak Rubin, Moshe, Afrik, Simon, Italianda, Binyamin Feinmesser, Benjamin Baruch. Benjamin Baruch, that's you. Benjamin, what's your background? You're in, why are you smicha?
And
what was the last thing?
I'm learning here in the morning, sir.
You're learning here in the morning. Very nice, Benjamin. I have a deep connection to Yeshiva Kotel. I have four grandchildren who went there. Four, if I'm correct, it could be more, but four for sure. And Jacob Levinstein, okay. And Binyamin, Feinmesser, okay, keep it fine. Okay, one second. What do we do today? Okay, we finished out the Kaddish Tshuva, we finished out the story. What did the Magen Avraham do? He threw a goral. That's a pretty sharp answer. And Rav Heschel Schechter evidently attributes it, who did he attribute it to? To the Mishnah Brura. Who did he attribute it to? The Noda B'Yehuda and the Mishnah, and the Mishnah Brura, by the way, comments on it too. And Benjamin Brown attributes it to the Chazon Ish. So, and the truth is, when all is said and done, I always answer these questions whatever the minhag is, that's what you have to follow. Kaddish, you can't be overly wise. What's fascinating is the Bihuda doesn't want to get involved in Hasidic concepts and in esoteric concepts. He will not get involved. And that's true to form for the Noda Bihuda. He was not an advocate of Hasidus. That is for sure. It was just beginning in his time, and if you read the Tshuva on the L'shem Yichud, you'll see he's very, very sharp against some of the Hasidic practices and the whole concept of the Hasidic Rebbe and the Tzaddik and people depending upon the Tzaddik. And I can tell you that these criticisms and these battles and these critiques live on until this very moment. And if you know what's going on in Israel with Degel HaTeira and Agudat Yisrael, the Litvaks versus the Chassidim, all I can tell you is this cleavage or this chasm, or call it what you wish, or this fission, unfortunately, is very much alive until today. And lo aleinu, if you wonder why Mashiach isn't here, the answer is very simple, because the way Mashiach will look and the way he's dressed, some will accept him and some will throw him out the door. You follow? We still haven't achieved unity on this level. And from my humble point of view, it's a great shame, but this is the reality. And tomorrow, Be'ezrat Hashem, what we have tomorrow, we have to finish out Alexander Rosenberg, and then we're going in to Reb Lazer Suva, the Agudas HaRabbanim, the young rabbis trying to breach the gap, to build a bridge. What Reb Lazer is trying, does he succeed, doesn't he succeed? Life moves on, as you will see. Life has its own power. It doesn't wait for you too long. Sometimes if you dilly-dally, the decisions are made for you, as we will see. It's a very fascinating class tomorrow. Next week, Be'ezrat Hashem, we will eulogize. Please tell people who knew Klausner. It's a shame, and I have what to say. Be on time next week, because the first part of this year, you'll see the gauntlet of the Rav of our Rebbe. Wow. And I have what to say. God should give me strength. And then we'll move back into announcing pages. And, does it have subdivisions? You'll see. We can talk about it endlessly. Okay. I want to mention very, very important. For those of you that heard my shirim over the last 40-plus years, a document has just come out of the archives of Rabbi Gorin. They're going to investigate whether this document is legitimate, the handwriting. It is from the Av Beis Din of Petach Tikva, when they declared the children Mamzerim, Rabbi Karlitz, I believe it's Rabbi Nissen Karlitz, and it's a letter to Rav Gorin from the Av Beis Din Shlomo Karlitz. It's from the Chazon Ish's family, Karlitz, and it says that Kvod HaRav Rashi Yisrael, Rav Shlomo Gorin, Sali, and he's apologizing and said, I was wrong in not going along with you and declaring these children Mamzerim. If this letter is accurate, it is historic, and it makes a guy named Don Rakefet very happy, those of that my shurim 40 years ago, that I was wrong in declaring them Mamzerim. Wrong. And the Yav Beit Din of Petach Tikva, where it originally went, of Shlomo Karelitz. And I have a lot to say on the letter, but it's not for now. Let's see if this letter, it has to be, you have to know it's accurate. The letter that surfaced on Mea Kahana, we know is accurate because it's on Yeshiva University stationery, and the stamp is there the day they received it. Here it's just a handwritten letter. But a very, very important document. And to my students listening, among them are students who 40 years ago heard the Shiurim and we wrote it up in Rakefet Aron Chelek Gimel, I just want to mention this document. If it is accurate, it's Merav Sinigra, and it shows that we were correct. We have nothing to apologize before, and our learning is right on.
Okay. Why would it keep it if it wasn't accurate?
I don't know. I don't know. You have to check the handwriting. If anyone is interested, this is on Munkach, on pictures out of the past. This is a student of mine. This is unbelievable. An Episcopalian diocese of Massachusetts. Simon, how do we get the tapes on? Okay, good. Okay. An Episcopalian diocese of Massachusetts, a lady, a bishop, got up and said that the Jews kill Arabs and at the Kotel HaMaravi, a kid was beaten up because his ball rolled down there. You have to read the letter my student, Dr. Norman Gold, wrote. It is fabulous. Not that it helps, but at least we have to protest. You know my book. The Mechilta says, Halacha, Esav Sonei LeYaakov. Whoever heard the word Halacha when it comes to Agada? But it's like a Halacha. It's part of human nature. It's in the DNA of many non-Jews, lo aleinu. This is the New York Times article on the Nazi God, 95, who was deported to Germany, Kol HaKavod. This is for Michael Miller. More strikeouts than hits. Once again, baseball has big problems. The games are boring. More strikeouts than hits. How do we solve it? This is America. The mayor of New York cuts the love pit and what his standards are. De Blasio on the yeshiva and the whole question of curriculum. And believe me, the more they torture the yeshiva in New York and England, it is fabulous because the more they come in Aliyah and become total Jews. This is the issue of contact. My wife saw the artwork, so I can give it away. And this is Samuel Bernstein, if you want one I quoted in class. Here is one copy. Here is a second copy. And I believe that's it. Until we meet again in health and happiness, thanks you for coming and honoring me with your presence. Das Vidanya. Okay.
Thank you. Thanks for tolerating my interruption. The interruption that I would have liked to make, but did not, because it would have been lengthy. Simon Pei, in the Meir Nesivos, quoted on that page of Ramah, which I believe you had here,
yes.
Which I am of.
Well,
this?
Who can take a picture? I need that back.
Can I take a picture of it?
Yeah, sure. But I need it back. I want
to. Yeah.
Right here. Right.
Shin Ayin Vav. It's actually the next page. Wait. A Sid Cotton. Right. I think it's the next page. It's Shuras Hatav. Looks like it should be.
Okay, the next page is right here.
The next page right here? Yeah. It is right here?
This is also recorded?
Yeah.
How do I stop it?
That's very easy to stop.
I paused this one. How do I stop it?
One second.